702.
SMS Karima
on 31702.
10 minutes past 9 o'clock. Now, widespread protests were expected in Venezuela today, where the opposition leader Juan Guaido urged supporters to take to the streets at noon and demand that sitting president Nicolas Maduro step down. Just hours before the protest, President Trump called Guaido and reinforced his support. The demonstrations would mark a week since the 35-year-old opposition leader declared himself interim president of Venezuela. Guaido was recently elected president of the country's National Assembly, and he says the Venezuelan constitution grants him authority to lead the country because Maduro was re-elected last year through fraud. Well, someone who has been following developments very closely in that country is, of course, Sharon Ibrahim, the foreign editor at Independent Media. Sharon, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Karima, and to your listeners. Thanks for having me.
Now, the dominant narrative on all the major international news outlets and even years in South Africa is that the people of Venezuela are suffering as a result of the socialistic principles brought in by Hugo Chavez, and the fact that the oil prices fell has meant that the country is now in dire straits and that it's time for a leadership change. There was, of course, elections. Maduro won. Some countries are not recognizing him. Others are, South Africa included. I had the Venezuelan ambassador here. What do you make of the situation in Venezuela? Does the opposition leader, according to you, have the right to declare himself the president of that country?
Absolutely not. Juan Guaido is basically someone who has been groomed by the United States for over a decade to basically ensure regime change in Venezuela. And if you track the history of Juan Guaido, I think you'd be quite surprised to see that, you know, even as early as 2010, he had attended secret training in Mexico City, where he was basically coached in the overthrow of Chavez at the time through violent barricades and what they call in Venezuela guarimbas. Which would and he actually was very active in 2014 and 2017 in the violent protests that tried to sow chaos and ungovernability in Venezuela. And we saw in 2017 the opposition engaged in the destruction of public infrastructure, the murder of government supporters. This is all something that was encouraged as part of an American imperialistic regime change agenda. And it basically follows the model that we know is called Otpor, which was an idea formulated in Serbia when they started to gather the ideas of those colored revolutions. And they had taken even 5 student leaders from Venezuela to Serbia in, I think it was 2005, and they had groomed them from this time and how to make sure that the socialist agenda and experiment of Hugo Chavez would fail.
Now, there is, when I had the ambassador on, we had a lot of people phone in. Some people were saying that the ambassador is talking absolute nonsense, that the people have rejected Maduro, and that the United States is not imposing sanctions on Venezuela. But today we saw the U.S. Secretary Stephen Mnuchin and the White House National Security Advisor announce economic sanctions against Venezuela and the Venezuelan state-owned oil company. And, of course, this is what the ambassador said. Venezuela is rich. It has money, but it is not allowed to buy basic medicines. And someone who watches these affairs quite closely, Brooke Spencer, wrote me a note saying, we can't talk about a blanket ban and a blanket sanctions because no such sanctions exist. But here we actually see that they do exist. What is your experience, Shannon, and what is your research telling you? What is the economic blockade against Venezuela about?
Well, basically right now, in terms of what they announced today, which is the sanctions on the Venezuelan state oil firm, they are trying to deny them money and they want to ensure a complete economic collapse. Because if you can have that type of chaos in society, then you can call for humanitarian intervention or some kind of military intervention from the United States. So they know that, well, what John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, said today is that this type of loss of revenue for Venezuela should total about $11 billion this year. So that's what their agenda is. And in the meantime, when people don't have food, they queue from 4 a.m. to get basic goods. They queue for all through the night to get, basic essentials, fuel, food, medicine is just not available. So one can say that that was the inefficiency, some will say, of the Maduro regime. But actually, I think the root cause, as you've alluded to, is the decline and collapse in global oil prices. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember that their economy, 95% of their export earnings comes from oil, and the economy is really too over-reliant on the oil industry. But the biggest thing which started to cause, it really stoked these violent opposition protests was the fact that there was actually the worst drought in Venezuela's history. And Venezuela is dependent on hydroelectric power for 70% of its electricity needs. And the U.S. was very pleased that there was this drought and that they couldn't get their electricity going, because it basically then suggested in the minds of the people that the government didn't know what they were doing. So they tried to paint that as the inefficiency of the socialist agenda of Maduro. But actually, it was other factors, I think, that were quite prevalent.
Now, for me, it's important to have different narratives. I mean, the global narrative is that what is happening in Venezuela is a good thing and that we need to get rid of the pro-poor programs that Hugo Chavez introduced. Use things like literacy, things like immunization, things like people going to primary school, finishing tertiary education, that tertiary education was in fact free. Those are things that are not counted as achievements of the Bolivarian Revolution in that country. Shannon, those programs are obviously now under great strain, considering that Venezuela is in the grip of sanctions and of course a desperate attempt by the U.S. to create almost a satellite state in Venezuela, the way they've done with a lot of other countries in that part of the world.
Yes, I think what's very sad is it always is those countries that are attempting a socialist experiment. We have the attempt of a socialist economy in Cuba, and it's almost made impossible by U.S. sanctions. So we'll never know whether it could have succeeded on its own, and I think that is also what they're afraid of. They wouldn't want to see a successful socialist experiment. But we must remember that Chavez himself was not a Marxist, but a democratic socialist. Mm. So all his welfare systems were really set out to solve the very egregious social problems in the country. And he was doing very well at the time that oil prices were high. In 2006, he had won with 65% of the vote and a 75% turnout. And we had Jimmy Carter observing some of these elections in Venezuela and saying all the mechanisms were in place to have free and fair elections. So we can basically say, if you want to go with the Carter Center assessment, that those were really legitimate elections, and he was actually delivering to his people. And as you're saying now, with the financial constraints, it's going to be very hard to deliver to the people. But I think there is still a lot of support for Maduro and the Bolivarian Revolution, if you like. And in the military in particular, if anything, it's very funny that Juan Guaido's wife called, I think it was yesterday, for the military to rise up against Maduro. But it's very naive, because the military actually wants Maduro to go back to the Bolivarian Revolution that they think that he didn't quite implement, and he's perhaps betrayed it in some respects. They're very much wedded to the ideas of the Bolivarian Revolution. It's probably just a minority of military officers who would go to the United States and plot and plan to basically assassinate him. And that's why it's really a recipe for a civil war, because you have a military that is not going to back down. You have a lot of support by the people for their current government, but then you have an opposition that's gotten 40 to $50 million from the United States. And this has all been pumped through U.S. NGOs like the National Endowment for Democracy, the Institute for the International Republican Institute, and the National Democratic Institute for International Affairs. These are the types of organizations, in addition to USAID and the CIA, that funnel this money to try and ensure the collapse of this type of government.
And of course, if we look at other parts of the world, if we look at places like Syria, Iraq, all the places where Libya, where the U.S. Wanted to enforce their version of democracies on those states, those are failed states. Those are places where the majority of people have fled their country. And of course, Venezuela cannot afford a civil war. Venezuelans should be allowed to sort out their own problems without the interference of the U.S.
Yes, and I think what's really disturbing, Karima, is that we're seeing a country that we always thought was progressive, like Canada, coming out in support of U.S., Israeli, and European policy to ensure a regime change in Venezuela, as well as those very right-wing groups, governments in Latin America, which are known as the Lima Group. I mean, there's a whole constituency in the Western world that wants to see Juan Guaido, who few people even knew who he was just a few years ago. I mean, he's really just been a middle-level official in the National Assembly. It was just that he was groomed to do exactly what he's doing. And the Western press, it just goes and parrots this government line, and it's almost unthinkingly and uncritically. We have the New York Times saying that Juan Guaido is a credible leader, Bloomberg. We're seeing the restoration of democracy, and the Wall Street Journal saying that he's a democratic leader. So, as you mentioned at the beginning, there's no critical analysis by yes. other alternative media, and those voices are not coming out.
Absolutely, and that is why we, of course, invited the ambassador to give that alternative view. It is always important in a situation where there's conflict to get as broad a set of views as possible. Thank you very much, Shannon Ibrahim, who's the group foreign editor for Independent Media.